Okay, you have to see this. You have got to see this. I'm standing on the ramp at Tripletree Aerodrome outside Woodruff, South Carolina, and I'm telling you, I have walked a lot of grass strips in my life. Nothing looks like this. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Ramp. This is Ramp Check. And today, I'm not taking you to an air show. I'm taking you somewhere quieter, somewhere that honestly might ruin every other runway for you because look down. Look at the grass under my feet. It's mowed like a golf green. I'm not kidding. I bent down and ran my hand across it, and it's tight, it's springy. It's this deep Bermuda green cut, so short, and so even you could putt a golf ball down the center line. And this runway, it runs 7,000 feet long, 400 feet wide, 7,000 feet of grass cut like a fairway. There is nothing else like it in the country, maybe the world. Let me take you there. Before I get rolling, a quick word from the folks who make this show possible. Today's segment is brought to you by aviationsoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every step of the journey. First solo, private pilot, instrument, all the way up. Mark the milestones that matter. Every coin tells a story. aviationsoul.com and a place like this is a milestone kind of place. So here's the setup. The identifier is Sierra Charlie 00. You won't find it on your everyday sectional the way you'd find a big towered field. It's a private field and it sits in the rolling country of upstate South Carolina, tucked between Greenville and Spartanburg, out where the land folds into these soft green hills. And the whole thing is one man's dream. His name was Pat Hartness. Now, Pat was a businessman, ran a big manufacturing company here in the Carolinas, but he was a pilot and a lover of airplanes down to his bones. And he had this vision. He didn't want to build just an airstrip. He wanted to build the most beautiful runway in the world and then throw the gates open and share it. Not sell it, share it. Think about that for a second. Most beautiful runway in the world. That was the actual goal. And when you taxi in, you realize he pulled it off. Let me paint the approach for you, because coming in here is half the magic. You come down over these tree lines and rolling pasture, and then this ribbon of impossibly green grass just opens up beneath you. It's massive, 400 feet wide, so it feels less like threading a needle and more like landing on a football field that never ends. And the grass is so well kept that your manes just kiss it. Touchdown on this stuff is like landing on a mattress. Pilots roll out, they shut down, and the first thing out of everybody's mouth is the same thing. Wow. Just wow. Now, here's what I love. Here's the part that gets me. Pat didn't hoard this. He built a clubhouse, he built camping areas, he ran power out to the tie downs so you could plug in. There's a lake on the property, Lake Genevieve, and you can fish it. There are these long tree-lined lanes where you park your airplane in the shade, pitch your tent right off the wingtip, and just stay. You camp under your wing. And I want you to really picture the evening here because this is where it gets special. The sun goes down over those Carolina hills, the heat of the day breaks, and the ramp fills up with the smell of campfires and coffee and somebody grilling. You've got a Piper Cub parked next to a slick RV, next to a Cessna 172, next to some home built the owner spent 9 years riveting together in his garage, and everybody's out walking airplane to airplane, fire to fire. That's the thing about a fly-in campground that a fuel stop can never give you. Nobody's in a hurry, nobody's watching a Hobbs meter. The airplane brought you here, but the airplane's done its job now. It's just you and a lawn chair and strangers who 3 hours ago were 300 miles apart and are now best friends because they both love the same weird, beautiful thing. I walked up on a group last night, must have been 15 people around one fire. And there's a guy in the middle telling this story about a gear-up landing he did back in the 80s, and he's laughing so hard he can barely finish it. And every single person around that fire has flown in from somewhere different to be right there. That's Tripletree, that's the whole thing. Now, let me tell you about the two big events, because this place has a rhythm. In the fall, usually September, they throw open the gates for the big full-scale fly-in, and they come hundreds of airplanes. This grass fills up with tail draggers and warbirds and light sport and antiques you've only ever seen in a magazine. The whole field turns into a tent city with wings. Pancakes in the morning, airplanes as far as you can see down those camping lanes. But here's the twist that surprises people. Tripletree might be even more famous for the little airplanes. Every spring in May, this field hosts Joe Nall Week. And Joe Nall is the biggest radio control model event in the world. I mean, the world. Thousands of modelers descend on this place with these gorgeous scale models, some of them with wingspans wider than my arms can reach, quarter scale, third scale, turbine-powered jets that scream down that grass, just like the real thing. And that manicured runway, turns out grass cut like a pudding green, is exactly what a delicate model airplane wants to land on too. Pat built a full-scale dream that became a model flying paradise by accident. Or maybe not by accident. Maybe he knew. I stood at the flight line during a model week once and watched a third-scale Mustang, a P-51, come screaming down the deck in a low pass, and I swear I forgot it was a model. The sound, the lines, the way it rolled off the top, grown men with cameras just going absolutely giddy. Same face a kid makes at their first air show. That face never goes away. It just finds new airplanes. And that's what this place does to you. It finds the 12-year-old that's still living inside every pilot. Let me tell you about the people who run it, because Pat's gone now, and this is the part of the story that matters most. When a place is one person's dream, the scary question is always the same. What happens when that person's not around anymore? A lot of great fields, a lot of great little strips, they've closed for exactly that reason. The dreamer moves on and nobody carries it. Not here. Pat set it up as a foundation, a nonprofit built to outlive him. And the people who keep this grass cut, who run the fly-ins, who wave you into your tie-down spot, a huge number of them are volunteers. They give their weekends, they give their vacation time, they come out and they mow and they weld and they cook and they marshal airplanes because they believe in what this place is. You want to know how much grass we're talking about? 400 acres, roughly, of turf on that property, kept up to that standard. That is not one guy on a riding mower. That is a small army of people who love this field enough to sweat for it. I talked to one of the volunteers, older gentleman, ball cap, been coming out for years, and I asked him why give up your Saturdays to mow somebody else's runway? And he just looked out over that green and he said, because somebody's gonna fly in here for the first time this weekend and it's gonna change their life. Same way it changed mine, because somebody's gonna fly in for the first time and it's gonna change their life. That's it, that's the whole thing right there. So let's say you wanna go because you should. Here's the real talk, the pilot stuff. This is a private field, so it is not a just show up situation for random landings. You go for the events or you go when they're open and welcoming visitors and you do your homework first. You get the current information, you understand the procedures, you respect that this is somebody's home and somebody's dream, not a public airport. The Triple Tree folks put out all of it, frequencies, procedures, event dates, what to expect on arrival. You read it, you follow it, you fit in. And a word on flying the grass itself, because a runway this nice makes it easy to forget it's still grass. 7,000 feet is enormous, so length is never your problem here. But grass behaves differently than pavement. It's soft, it grabs, your rollout is shorter, but your takeoff roll is longer. And after rain, it changes fly your soft field technique. Weight off the nose wheel, ease it on, ease it off. Treat that beautiful turf like it deserves to be treated. And slow down on the ground and in your head. This is not a place to be sharp and quick and get the airplane put away. This is a place to shut the mixture off, sit in the cockpit for a second, and just listen to how quiet it got. Then go find a campfire. You know what stuck with me most walking around here? It's what wasn't here. There's no ticket booth. There's no VIP rope line. There's no thing being sold to you at every turn. Somebody had every reason to build a fence around the prettiest runway in the world and charge admission, and instead they built picnic tables and invited you to stay the night for free-ish and fish in the lake. Aviation can feel expensive, it can feel like it's slipping away from regular people, and then you come to a field like this, built on the idea that the best thing you can do with something beautiful is give it away to everybody who loves it, and you remember what pulled you into all this in the first place. It was never really about the airplanes, it was about where they take you and who's standing there when you shut down. Big thanks on this one to the Triple Tree Aerodrome Foundation and the volunteers who let me wander their grass and pester them with questions, and to the reporting over the years from AOPA and the EAA that's kept this field story out where pilots can find it. If you want to see photos of that grass, and you really should, look up Triple Tree and then start planning a fall trip, and you can always find us over at radiohangar.com.
Me? I'm going to go grab a lawn chair, park it by the wingtip, and watch the sun go down over the greenest runway I've ever seen. See you out on the ramp.